Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow on our show, a conversation with the wonderful National Book Award-winning author Alice McDermott. She's written a collection of essays called What About the Baby? Some Thoughts on the Art of Fiction. It's an art she knows very, very well, and I found her insights in this book really revelatory. So I look forward to talking with Alice McDermott, certainly one of my favorite authors, tomorrow here on Midday, and I hope you can join us. Black Friday is the day after Thanksgiving, and it's traditionally one of the biggest shopping days of the year, the kickoff of a shopping frenzy that retailers hope will sustain them for many months. Well, this year, those hopes may be dashed. Supply chain problems are affecting sectors up and down the economy. What can sellers and buyers expect this year? Joining me now is Professor Tinglong Day of the Johns Hopkins University Carey Business School. Professor Day, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for your time. And listeners, we'd like to hear from you. Tell us any supply shortages that you have experienced when you go to buy toys for your kids or you go to buy electronics for those folks that you want to give gifts to for the holiday season or yourself. What kinds of experiences are you having in the stores? Are the shelves as full as they usually are? Are there things that you definitely can't find? We'd love to hear from you about your experiences. 410-662-8780. That's our number. Our email is midday@wipr.org, and you can tweet us at @midday_WIPR. So, Professor Day, the situation has been described as a perfect storm, these supply chain problems. Can you give us an overview? What are some of the elements contributing to this perfect storm that's got us in the pickle we're in?
Well, obviously, the elephant in the room is the COVID. Earlier in the pandemic, because consumers spend more time at home, less time at work, so the demand for services decreased, but demand for products increased across the board. We think about, for example, personal computers. People had been talking about, the death of a PC for many, many years until the COVID. But then in 2020, you have so many popular PC models sold out for much of a pandemic. Then also think about the use of the cars. And when people hesitated to take a public transportation or Uber, they opted to buying a vehicle. So suddenly used cars got really, really expensive. Not to mention we have a chip shortage and now average vehicle selling price is $43,000. Crazy expensive. That's basically luxury price for buying a personal vehicle. And then fast forward in 2021 here, most retailers faced depleted inventory, and they're also expecting to have a really normal-ish holiday shopping season. So they are in a really panic ordering mode. They order larger quality and quantity than usual. So in response to the orders, so we have overseas manufacturers mostly located in Asia. They produce faster, they produce more, they ship to send more and more goods to our ports, like those in Los Angeles, in South Carolina. So we ended up having this overcrowded supply chain that doesn't really connect its both ends very well. And also not to mention shipping fees has increased and used to cost probably $20,000, per container. Now that the price can increase to something as high as $16,000. So, and we are in a situation that we have a lot of products to be sent to the U.S. and a lot of products already arrived in the U.S. But just that our supply chain, this little pipe doesn't expand in the short term. So a lot of goods, they are really jamming up here. So they just don't move. That's basically what we are seeing right now.
And with the ports, yesterday, President Biden and the folks at the White House assembled a group of the heads of retailers, union leaders, longshoremen representatives, and they worked out a deal. They helped broker a deal where the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach, which account for about 40% of the imports to the United States, would now stay open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And the president even indicated in his remarks yesterday that this was a model that they hoped would continue even when the supply chain problems had been ironed out. What do you think the effect of that's going to be with just those two ports, for example, Los Angeles and Long Beach, going to a 24/7 model? Is this something that people are optimistic about, being able to attenuate the supply chain problem, all those ships waiting out in the harbor with no place to dock?
Good question. There are really two sides of the answer. On the one hand, we need to realize that what's happening in LA, in Long Beach, South Carolina ports is not the problem. That's more like symptoms. And if you want to fix the supply chain, we need to fix like online disease. We don't want to treat the symptoms, right? Because what's going on in LA, you know, you see those cargo ships, they want to move. That's not because people are not working 24/7. What's really underlying the problem is we have a domestic supply chain consisting of warehouses and the truck, you know, all the trucks and the railway trains, et cetera, et cetera. We already have 3.6 million people working as truck drivers. We still need more. We're not going to get more in the short term. So unless we have more trucks and up and running, we have more warehouse spaces. But right now, they're pretty much fully utilized. So it's not going to immediately ease the situation in the short term. Having said that, on the positive side, I must give the credit to the Biden administration for starting the change, because if the ports are working 24/7, that really gives the incentive for other parts of the supply chain to work harder, because someone has to really start you know, changing the situation. So it's not going to lead to immediate or visible change, but it's a very good start.
So, for example, this holiday shopping season, when it comes to retail goods, even including food, do you expect that the problems that people are predicting we may have will in fact be in place? I mean, what's your understanding of the chances of any of this being worked out in time for, you know, that November and December shopping crunch?
So let me be clear here. Not all the shortages are created equal. And for example, right now, if you want to buy a TV, you have no problem finding high-priced TV models. And those cost you $2,000, $3,000 models. They are there. It's just harder to buy cheaper models. And the same is true for a lot of categories. So it's generally true that high-priced items, you have a lot of stock. It's just that for cheap, less expensive items, it's harder. And the other thing to keep in mind is that we don't have a shortage of essential items. I'm talking about the situation that I don't know anyone is hunting for hand sanitizers, toilet papers, milk, or eggs, or vegetables. We are talking about gifts for the loved ones. And we are worrying about, can we get the ideal gifts? And can we have them delivered to the front doors on time? As bad as it may sound, those are non-essential goods. So I would really think that this isn't a situation that really keep us up awake at night. This is very, very different from March 2020. During those days, we were hunting for toilet papers like crazy, but this is a situation that we may not find the right color, right size, and right products for now, but rest assured that we have enough supply. We have a lot of products already, either already here in the U.S. or they're on the way to the U.S. ports. And so this is a very different game we are in.
Dr. Tinglong Dai is professor of operations management and business analytics at the Johns Hopkins Carey Business School. We're talking about supply chain disruptions caused by any number of things, including climate change and weather problems around the world. Obviously, the outbreak of COVID in Asia, as well as other places around the globe, backups in the ports. The backup at the port of Baltimore appears to be under control. Nathan Sterner this morning reporting on our air that business is up about 12% at the port of Baltimore since August, and they seem to be able to handle the increase there, but other ports have big backups, like the Port of Los Angeles and Long Beach in California. As we have been discussing, the president has intervened in that situation and convinced those ports to stay open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We'll then see, as Professor Day was just mentioning, whether or not truckers and other parts of the people in the trains and other modes of transportation to get that inventory from the port to retail shelves can rise to the challenge as well. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle @MiddayWIPR. I'd love to hear from you about your experience in stores. What are you finding is hard to locate? What are you finding is a difficult get in terms of the things that you're looking for? I mean, Professor Day, for example, you mentioned that we don't have a problem with a shortage of toilet paper. I know there was a big run on toilet paper back in the beginning of the pandemic. But I understand that stores like Costco and even some of the giant supermarkets here in this area have at least strongly encouraged people not to buy more than one or perhaps two packages of toilet paper at a time. Is this just... Are these stores hedging their bets, or do you think they have some level of fear that it's going to be difficult for them to restock the shelves if people buy more than they're used to buying?
Well, I think they're really being cautious here, and because as far as I know, you know, the toilet paper supply chain and the most paper goods product are mostly domestic or close to the United States. We do not really import a lot from Asia. So that's an entirely separate issue from what's going on right now. Having said that, you know, because which...
And we seem to have lost Professor Day. I'll tell you what, we're going to take a quick break and we'll try to get Professor Day's line back in working. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Dr. Tinglong Day is a professor of operations management and business analytics at the Carey Business School at Johns Hopkins University. We will have more with him after this quick break, and we invite you to join our conversation. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. You can tweet us @MiddayWIPR. You can tweet me @TomHallWIPR. Stay with us.
You're listening to your NPR news station, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you've just joined us, we're talking about disruptions to the supply chain that may have a deleterious effect on the holiday shopping season and beyond. There will likely be shortages of electronics and toys and even some food items. My guest is Dr. Tinglong Day of the Johns Hopkins University Carey School of Business. Again, I'd love to hear your experience being out and shopping, being at the mall or being at some of the big box stores, the Walmarts, the Targets, the Costcos, the Sam's Clubs. Are there shortages there that you're noticing? And are there things that you're worried about, either as gift-giving possibilities for the holidays or just things that you need and you need to stock up on? We talked yesterday to John Davis of Motor Week about the difficulties in buying a car. John suggested that this isn't the greatest time to buy a car because of a number of factors that are making the prices of cars be much higher than usual. So I'd love to hear your experience. 410-662-8780. Midday@WIPR.org is our email. Our Twitter handle is @MiddayWIPR. So, Professor Day, why is there a shortage of truck drivers? The UK had a similar problem. There were so few people delivering gas to gas stations that there were huge lines for petrol in Britain. Here in the United States, it just seemed to a layperson like me that all of a sudden there weren't enough people to drive trucks. How did that happen?
Well, slightly different situation across UK and the US. In the UK, you know, a lot of things due to Brexit, and you traditionally have a lot of drivers from Europe, and now you suddenly have visa restrictions. We don't have that problem here in the US, but what we have here is that we have 3.1 million people who are driving trucks. That's actually more than 1% of the entire US population. I wouldn't say this is a shortage of truck drivers. It's just that we have a surging demand in the short term, and we cannot just get people to switch to become truck drivers because you need to get them trained, you get a license, get the paperwork, and not to mention need to proper monitoring and ongoing supervision. And that doesn't happen just overnight. You cannot just do that like Uber, and it takes weeks or months to get new truck drivers. So I wouldn't characterize as a truck driver shortage. It's just that this is relatively short-term demand. We do not have enough people.
Yeah, that's interesting. So it's a demand issue, not a supply issue of truck drivers. What about energy prices? U.S. oil closed above $80 a barrel this week. That's the first time that's happened since 2014. That's according to the Wall Street Journal. I understand there's an energy shortage in China and that India is in even worse shape than that. And all of these shortages, they're closing manufacturing centers. They're having power problems in a lot of places around the world. Axios said the way they put it was that inflation is bad, but energy price inflation is terrible. So there's a particular acuity, isn't there, to the rise in price of energy. We've seen rise in price certainly of gas in the last couple of weeks here in the United States. But what's your outlook for energy prices moving forward?
Well, this isn't exactly my research area, but from supply chain perspective, it's really a complicated interaction of supply and demand. If you look at what's going on in the UK, it's really due to shortage of truck drivers. You need people to transport the gas line from place to place. In China, that's a different story because you know the coal prices have increased dramatically just over the past few months, past year or so, because of a lot of geopolitical problems. And then suddenly you have those, you have electricity generating companies. They have issues because the price for electricity has been strictly controlled, but the cost has skyrocketed. So they decided to reduce the production. So that has caused a lot of problems with the power outage. And not to mention, we have a lot of factories they have to shut down because of power outage. And so it's a complicated problem and going on here, but it's quite encouraging to see that this administration and is paying attention and to addressing the problem, and is encouraging private players to reduce the energy prices by doing whatever is needed, whatever they can. I do think this is short-term a crisis. This will not be a long-term problem.
Let's go to the phones. We have a caller, Tom, who's on the line from Baltimore. Tom, welcome to Midday with Dr. Day. Hi, you're on the air. So what have you been looking for that you can't find?
Something I thought was pretty silly that I couldn't find it. A white dress shirt with a 15.5-inch neck. I've been to 4 or 5 different stores, and I'm on a wait list.
Wow. Now, are the dress shirts available in other sizes? I mean, smaller or larger? Is it just that you have a very common neck size?
Ones with the bigger necks and very small ones, but 15.5 is a very common size. And, just can't find it.
Wow, that's interesting. And do you mind my asking, what about the price? Because we're told that, you know, a lot of things definitely have gone up. Children's shoes, for example, up 12%. But that clothing prices in general have gone down a little bit. What's been your experience?
Well, there were none to buy. So I really don't know how much they were. Yeah. I was, looking all over. So I really don't know for sure.
Yeah, well, fair enough. Okay, well, thanks for letting us know, Tom. I appreciate it, and good luck. Let's go to Stacy. She's on the line from Silver Spring. Welcome.
Hi. I had a question more from the consumer point of view. To what extent are some of the supply chain problems related to problems with the U.S. Postal Service?
That's a great question, Stacy. Thank you for that. Professor Day, what do you think? There have been all sorts of problems at the USPS. How do they play into all this?
Oh, well, it could have something to do with USPS, but I don't think if you want to blame someone, I don't think USPS is the first person we should point the finger at. I think this is really due to we still have a lot of goods that are getting stuck at the ports, on warehouses, or on trucks, and they're not moving fast enough. They haven't been transferred to USPS yet. And I think that's really the main reason we see this shortage or delay in delivery. So I wouldn't, I don't think US Post Services is a main actor in this supply chain crisis.
They might be slowing things down by the time, you know, you get it in that final mile to the door. But the bigger problem, I suppose, then is getting it to the USPS to begin with. We have an email from Kim Lane, who's the executive director of Pigtown Main Street. And she says, this is a friendly reminder that Baltimore is full of wonderful local businesses to buy gifts. So if you have problems at some of the big box places or some of the online places, there are plenty of local businesses, as Kim reminds us, that deserve our support. The outlook for inflation, there are a lot of people who are concerned about this, and inflation, talk about how inflation is related to the supply chain. It's both a cause and a result of supply chain problems, isn't it? I mean, how does inflation play into all of this? And what's your understanding of where inflation is headed in the next few months?
Well, it's a chicken and egg problem. You could say that inflation made this shortage worse, but part of the reason we're seeing this dramatic increase in consumer prices is because we have a lot of supply shortages. And that reflected in two aspects. One, as I mentioned earlier, is that people are forced to buy more expensive goods. Think about vehicles and think about TV models, washing machines, dryers. On the other hand, people are have to pay higher prices for traditionally cheaper models, cheaper products. And so I do want to echo the point that this is a great opportunity, this is a great time for us to reflect upon the importance of supporting local businesses, buying local and buying domestic made products, because we do have a thriving local business sector. We do have a U.S. manufacturing sector. We need to support them for a variety of reasons, but really for selfish reasons, is that if we want to have a really resilient supply chain, want to have a really responsive supply chain, they should be close to where we are, and which is true particularly for niche products, and which traditionally is not a problem because the supply chain has been functioning really smoothly and following this just-in-time model, and they are shipped from Asia in 15 days, 25 days. But when things are not certain, this is really where the advantage of having the manufacturers close to where we are. And the other aspect is that we are a country that take pride in innovation. But if we lose our manufacturing sector, we will also stop innovating. So we need to have to be close to where things are being made for us to be able to continue to innovate in this global business.
So it's not just a matter of people who sell things locally, but they have to produce them locally as well. So the supply chain disruptions aren't going to be as problematic. In terms of government policy, Professor Day, what do you think the government could be doing? Because when it comes to, for example, getting the ports to stay open 24 hours a day, it's nice that the president was able to convince people to do that. But does the federal government or do state and local governments have much capacity to affect the supply chain? Because isn't the supply chain really managed and run by private industry rather than the government?
Yeah, I think this is an important time for us to remember that the U.S. has the most efficient supply chains you can ever find in the world. And that's largely run by private businesses. It's not run by the government. And we don't want to go back to the Soviet Union kind of model where the shortage was actually the norm. And we already had the most efficient supply chains and we have a short-term problem. but we don't want to go back to the go to the government technical model, right? We certainly do not want to do Defense Production Act because this isn't a war, and we're not really have a severe shortage of PPEs or hand sanitizer, toilet papers, milk, etc. This is something that government can help, but the government will not be able to help much. And they could help by reduce the bureaucratic processes, for example, by speeding up the license process for people to become new truck drivers, by providing support for career training. But this isn't a time for the government to take over the supply chain. The supply chain has been running by private enterprises, has been incredibly efficient.
And last Friday, I think it was about 130 nations agreed to a global tax, a minimum global tax of 15% on large companies. These are companies with annual income in the many millions of dollars, more than $866 million. So this was meant to counter some of those countries who were having particularly low tax rates, corporate income tax rates, so that the corporations were flocking to those places. Is that going to level the playing field? And the fact that there's now a 15% tax on some of these companies or in countries that didn't have it prior, is that going to contribute to inflation as well? How do you see this affecting supply chain and the global economy?
It could play out in the long run, but I don't see any immediate impacts in the next 2 to 3 years. And the tax rates, obviously, they have implications for investments and also for where goods will be produced, be shipped. But in the short term, it's about physics, right? And we're saying, long term is about macroeconomics. In the short term, it's physics. So the physics of the supply chain world is remarkably disturbing. It's not going to change just within the next 2 or 3 years. Like we talk about the bringing manufacturing back to the U.S., it's not really happening or not happening fast enough because the physics laws is there. You still have places are making such goods. And this is not just about the cost. This is about expertise. You have workers who know how to make reliable and high-quality goods really efficiently. And you have this transportation network, infrastructure, and everything has to happen for supply chain transformation to happen. But in the short term, in the next 2-3 years, I do not see any immediate changes.
And we just have about a minute left. The cost of some things have gone down. Hotel rooms, car rentals, they were spiking in the summer when people were traveling more. But then as the Delta variant spread, people traveled less. So airline tickets, the cost of the airline tickets went down. It really does depend. Particular sectors are going to be very much susceptible to the vagaries of COVID-19, and others are going to be somewhat immune. Do you see any particular sector that is a real problem on the horizon? Do you see a problem in a particular place in the economy in the next couple of months?
Well, I think one sector, I'm someone who spends most of the time looking at the healthcare sector. I do think we want to be careful about the potential drug shortages, potential medical devices shortages. So this isn't just about one type of product. And this could be about products we never thought of we would run short of. So I'm actually hosting this event about the Johns Hopkins Symposium on supply chains this Friday, actually tomorrow. And so this is something that I pay close attention to. I hope it does not happen, but if it happens, it can have devastating consequences.
All right. Well, we will keep our eye on it. Professor Tinglong Dai, Professor of Operations Management and Business Analytics at Johns Hopkins Carey Business School. Thank you, Professor. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
That's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, a conversation with the acclaimed writer Alice McDermott. She's a National Book Award winner and the author of a new collection of essays called What About the Baby? Some Thoughts on the Art of Fiction. Alice McDermott joins me tomorrow on Midday. Stay tuned now for Here and Now, that's on the way after news at the top of the hour. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. Have a great day.
You're listening to your NPR News Station. Member supported 88.1. WYPR.